Forecasters predicted Hurricane Irma would be Florida's big one, and it was a big storm causing big problems. We are hearing from listeners and their overall experiences before, during, and after the storm. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, this is a Florida Matters special, the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. Listeners are sharing their observations on everything from local government response, what surprised you about the storm, and attempts to find gas in those power outages. Joining me here in the studio is Florida Matters producer Stephanie Colombini.
Thanks, Carson.
One tip I picked up on, and you see this all over the place on Facebook, social media, a friend of mine shared this with me: fill up your top-loading washing machine with ice water to help keep things cold. Now, mine's a front loader, so I was out of luck. But, you know, you hear things like that, tips to make life a little easier.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes neighborhoods come together in this type of situation. I know at my apartment complex in South Tampa, I was lucky enough to be in one of the only buildings that did have power, but every neighbor on the other side of me was wiped out. Everyone was sitting outside all night on their lawn chairs, just chatting, getting to know one another. So it's weird how sometimes these, you know, devastating storms can actually bring some positive change. You get to know somebody.
I'll tell you, though, it's hit or miss. In my power finally went on back on last night, and I thought, oh, okay, good, the neighborhood's on. I wasn't venturing out or anything. And then I get up this morning and go to just like a block away, and it's just total darkness. So power is a huge issue. Tens of thousands are still without power. All right, let's go to our first caller, Bonnie. Where are you calling from, by the way?
From Sunset Beach, Treasure Island, Pinellas County.
Ah, you were out on the beaches.
I got stranded here. I was here all through the hurricane, which was an absolute nightmare. The wind howled all night long. The electricity went down. I was sitting in the dark with a flashlight up until 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30, and you're wondering if the roof's going to blow off, if you're going to lose everything you have in your life and what little you got. I have never been so scared and discombobulated and anxiety prone in my entire life, and I've lived down here since 1978.
Wow.
And I went through all those other hurricanes, Charlie, Jean, and Francis. I mean, I've been through all of them, and this one was just so terrifying because all my neighbors left. It was like Ghost Town, USA, and I was I couldn't get out of here. By the time I realized how dangerous the situation was, I was stuck. They said, don't move from where you're at. Don't try to get a ride. Stay home. It's safer. I said, I'm right on the Gulf Coast. I mean, the Sunset Beach is like half a block from me. So I said, all I can do is keep my faith and keep up my spirit and, you know, survive.
Well, Bonnie, I am so glad that you are apparently okay through all this, and the storm may not have been as bad, but you said you were stranded?
Yeah, I didn't have a hurricane kit. I didn't have a plan, and at the very last minute, they started calling and say, evacuate, leave immediately. I was unable and unprepared to do anything better. I have two pets. I have a dog and a cat, and although there's a shelter not really that far from me, it's on 17th Street in St. Petersburg, I would have to have rides to get there, and all my neighbors were gone. They'd evacuated. They were panic-stricken. I've never seen a group that was so, it was like the rats deserting the sinking ship.
Bonnie, get out there and get that hurricane kit put together. You know, we've got a little more hurricane season to go here, I hate to say. It's great to hear that you're okay and are hopefully recovering soon from the trauma of this. It was a very emotional and traumatic experience, and we appreciate your call. Get that hurricane kit ready, okay? Let's go to Marcel now. He's in Largo. And Marcel, it sounds like you have a pretty good suggestion. Get those gas stockpiles up.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, I don't have a very terrible experience from the storm, but I was wondering about ideas. Why is it that the state doesn't park a few tanks of, like, with gasoline to at least know that people will have enough gas and not wait an hour before they hit the road? Number two,
yes.
I know public transportation is an issue, but it's not. Maybe now we should start thinking about trains that can take so many people from South Miami to North, wherever they go, and facilitate the highways.
There are trains in South Florida.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they stay open for evacuations.
It can be tough. I mean, if the conditions are that unsafe that they don't want people driving on the roads, they probably don't want trains on the tracks. You know, that's expensive equipment, and it can be very dangerous. But I know in the Tampa Bay area, we are hungry for public transportation. We don't have a lot. So I can imagine for people in this area, getting out without a car would have been really tricky. In terms of the fuel, you know, we're no experts, but I know the state was working around the clock up until it wasn't safe, getting as much fuel shipped in. I think this was just a really rare situation where that many people across the entire state really needed to get out. It wasn't just one small area, so they had to get fuel to millions of people. I know even now, driving down Fowler Avenue right on the way to the university where we're based out of, every gas station had, you know, trash bags over the pumps. They're wiped mm-hmm. out. So hopefully, I know the Port of Tampa Bay opened today. Hopefully, they get that gas coming in soon.
Marcel, thank you so much for the call. Are you still without power? I've talked to so many people who are, and it is just a shame.
Yeah, that could be tough. Well, earlier today, I spoke with Sherry Jacobs. She's a spokeswoman with Tampa Electric Company, or TECO. She says they had about 425,000 customers initially without power from Irma. Since the storm passed, they've restored a good chunk of that. You can actually go on their website and track the power outages to get a feel for how much is currently restored. I asked her what kind of challenges crews face trying to restore that many people's power in a timely fashion.
You know, this is a massive undertaking. In fact, restoration from Hurricane Irma is the largest restoration effort in U.S. history. Isn't that amazing? So yeah. We are part of something that is really huge. And we have, in addition to about 1,000 folks that Tampa Electric has, working in the field right now and since the storm, we have reinforcements on the way. And today, the cavalry arrives. We have 3,500 workers coming to Tampa, to the Tampa area, to help our crews get the power back on. Now, one of the challenges here is the sheer volume of outages. If you take a look at our outage map, you can get an idea of the expanse of the outages. And these take time, they take people, they are, difficult to restore. Some are very simple and some are very complex. So having this extra beefed up staff, if you will help us with restoration. And we hope that this helps us restore our customers quicker and safer than we would have by ourselves, because we know folks want their air conditioning back as quickly as possible.
That's right. There's, you know, that's great that as many people that didn't have power have already gotten theirs restored. But there's plenty of people who still don't have power. They're hot. They're frustrated. They, you know, they want to charge their phone and watch TV. What can you tell them?
You know what? I know being without power, it affects so many aspects of our lives. And now that the storm has passed, people want to get back to normal. And having electricity is a key part of that. Now, restoration is expected to be lengthy. It's expected to take days. Thankfully, we were not as hard hit as other parts of the state where restoration is taking weeks. So we are thankful that restoration will take days in this region. And we have, as I mentioned, reinforcements on the ground to help shorten that as much as possible. And I know that being without power is such an inconvenience. I did not have power at my house for a while as well, so solidarity there. And we absolutely appreciate everyone's patience as we work through these outages, and we promise we'll get everyone back on.
Sherry Jacobs, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, do we have Natalie on the line?
Yes, this is Natalie. Good morning.
Hi, Natalie. Thank you for calling in.
Sure. Thank you for hosting us. I wanted to talk about the power communities coming together. So before Irma came through, I live in a condominium in Riverview, and our neighbors were out picking up yard signs, door decor, making sure anything that could fly was taken down for people who had already left town.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hosted my mom, who lives near Brandon High School. So before she got home to her 40-year-old neighborhood, her neighbors had already cleared trees off of the roof, cut them down, had stuff on the curb. And I just want to encourage people, you don't have to travel far to be able to help people.
That is
someone
very, very good
point. Yard or what have you, you know, just offer to lend a hand, just like you would want somebody to do that to you.
Yeah, many of us help our neighbors after a big storm. You know, if there's a retired couple next door with a big tree across the driveway, you get your chainsaw out and get to work.
The other thing that I wanted to share is after this is over, I would really like for the legislature and the governor to have a serious conversation about building codes. I think it was after Andrew that South Florida changed their building codes to where, I don't know, I call it wood. I'm sure it has a more formal name, but I know in the Tampa Bay area, whether it's apartments or single-family homes, the first floor may be block, and then the additional floors are made out of wood. And I really feel like Florida as a whole, just because of where we're positioned, we need to revisit our building codes. I know it would cost more, but it would be in the best interest of our citizens.
I know vis-a-vis Andrew, you're talking about wood homes. I think we're calling them stick homes. And they did outlaw the construction of those cracker box style homes down there. There are other building codes in place since Andrew. But the problem is many developers and many local communities sort of overlook some of that stuff because it would impact the revenue. Well, Natalie, thank you so much. Let's go to Jonathan now from Lutz. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi.
You're a former EMT?
Yes, out in the Lutz area. One of the things that I want to talk about really quickly was not only preparedness. One of the things that I've done is, you know, I have about 2 weeks worth of dried food storage. I have 2 55-gallon water barrels that were just, you know, plastic food storage. But food storage preparation, gas storage, as well as, just like your previous caller, getting to know your neighbors and having that sense of community, that's something that's going to keep more people safe. Connecting, communicating, letting people know who have what resources. So in an emergency like this, or worse for the folks that are down in South Florida, that preparedness saves lives.
Exactly. And I often wonder about this. We have many new residents of Florida. They've come down a lot from the Midwest, and they prepare up there every year for those big snowstorms. They do it almost instinctively. They'll check their generators. They'll make sure they have a supply of food. Now, they also may have to check their snow removal equipment, something we don't have to do. But many, you know, it's almost the same in a way.
That kind of preparedness, if you're out of gas, water, food for a week, for two. I was up in Northwest Florida when Hurricane Ivan came by and also saw the kind of craziness that came post-Hurricane Katrina. Having those supplies on hand means that you're not out and about trying to vie for viable resources with other people. You're there. You're keeping yourself and your family safe. You're, you know, sharing with your neighbors if you can. And coming together like that is really what will keep not only you and your family safe, but your community safe as well.
You're listening to a Florida Matters special on Hurricane Irma. Lots of folks have experiences to share, and we will hear from many more when we continue. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is a Florida Matters special on Hurricane Irma. I'm Carson Cooper, along with Stephanie Colombini. Share your comments or observations about the storm on Twitter at WUSF. We're on Facebook, too, and at WUSFnews.org. There are reports out now that tens of thousands in the Keys may have to be evacuated. They're running out of water and food. The entire population of the Keys, they were supposed to evacuate before the storm, and he said, nope, I'll just stick it out. Some folks just don't evacuate.
You know, there's this issue where you've experienced past storms, and maybe those weren't so bad. So you think, I can handle this. And so you're like, I'm going to stay home. I can do this. I went through the last one. They said it was going to be a big deal. It wasn't a big deal. That's something emergency officials are actually kind of worried about, especially, you know, Irma was supposed to whack Tampa. And then, you know, we definitely have some damage, but it's not as bad as people expected. And emergency officials want residents in this region to know, stay on your guard. In the future, if we're telling you to evacuate, please evacuate.
Anne in Sarasota has a thing or two to say about deciding whether to stay or go. Anne?
Yeah, I found this decision about whether we should stay or go really excruciating. Even at work, in the days leading up to it, we were watching the spaghetti models change, and it went way out east, so we calmed down and decided to stay. And then it shifted all the way west, and my mother and my husband didn't want to leave, and I wanted to go to Kentucky or Georgia or something.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't decide. Like, there just seemed like no obvious answer.
Well, I don't think there can be, really. Storms are unpredictable. Do you remember Charlie back in 2004? The Tampa Bay area had a bullseye on it, and then within hours before landfall, it took a sharp right and hit southwest Florida. And I wonder, does forecasting, does it make you cynical about hurricanes? If the forecast is wrong, and they often are earlier on, does that make you cynical about it?
You know, I'm not going to let myself get cynical because I know how important they are. And I don't want to be like, next storm, we're not doing anything. But I do have to say, we went to extreme. My husband's a big safety guy. So we stacked all of our belongings up at least 18 or 24 inches. And our beds are at the ceiling right now. We still don't have power. I'm a block from Sarasota Bay. We have live power lines sitting in a puddle in our backyard, and that hasn't been fixed yet. So I'm going to trust the models the best that I can, and you just couldn't deny this one. It was heading right for us, so we had to gear up for it.
I will say this, though. Forecasters keep telling us, don't focus on the spaghetti models. Focus on that bigger cone of uncertainty. I mean, if you're 100 miles away from the spaghetti model tracks, but you're in that cone, that's what you need to worry about. I'm glad you're apparently okay in Sarasota, and maybe next time you'll make a different decision. I don't know, but I'm glad you're safe.
You know, we've had reporters out in the field covering Hurricane Irma all weekend, working around the clock. One of them, our reporter Bobby O'Brien, you might have heard her cover veteran stories. Her and her husband were preparing their house, looking for things, getting their hurricane kit ready, and they found old bright orange rain ponchos from the 1980s Tampa Bay Buccaneers when they were opening up old hurricane supply boxes. I think that's really cool. They hadn't seen those in a long time. You know, when you're preparing your house, sometimes you see old memories, or what was important to you? Did you come across any cool old photographs? What did you say I need to save in case my house gets damaged?
What to say? What do you need to save? I think my wife and I might disagree on a few items.
Yeah.
Gary is in South Tampa. Why do you save photographs?
My sister and her family, my family and my mother all went to Odessa to stay at my brother's house. I was convinced that South Tampa was going to be flooded and tons of property damage. And you were talking about photo albums. You think about all your memories, and I loaded up 25 years of photo albums and just put them in the car and brought them over, and we would randomly just kind of open up a page just to look at some of the photographs, but just very thankful today, very thankful.
Well, Gary, thank you so much. I'm glad you are thankful, and I'm glad there are things to be thankful for after this storm. We were talking about evacuations early. Were you under orders to get out? What was your experience? Carol in St. Petersburg has a thing or two to say about that. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm sorry to be negative, but it really wasn't a very good experience. And I wish that they would have the people educated that were doing the registration. This was a animal evacuation center. And they said, do you have carriers? And I said, yes. That's all they said. When I got there, I found out that the kitty litter, the food, and the water, I didn't have it. And I had two cats. So I guess they felt sorry for me because I'm in my 70s. And they said, okay, we'll get you a crate. Then I found out that the animals weren't with us. They were in another room. I wish they would have told me that on the phone. And the animals are stressed out just like you are. You want to be near them. Then finally, the place was overcrowded. They tell you there's going to be a cop. Again, I'm 7 in my 70s. I went there. There was nothing but sleeping on the floor or in a chair. There was nothing. And everybody was pushed together, sandwiched in. You didn't have a room to even turn around if you wanted to.
Well, Carol, we're often told to expect a Spartan experience at those shelters. But as for pets, I would think that if they let you with your kittens in or cats in, they would have to let somebody with their three Rottweilers in, too. And it could be kind of a mess among other people in that shelter. So I think they just have to make a rule about where pets go and where people go.
Yeah, and, you know, someone might have a pet allergy, but they went to the pet shelter because it was the closest one. So I guess there are some reasons why they would keep them separated, but I'm sure that was frustrating. I know personally my dog evacuated with my boyfriend and I was still here. I miss my dog a lot, so I know what it's like to want to be close to your pet.
Sandy is in St. Petersburg. Hi, Sandy.
Hey there. Listen, here in Old Northeast, I don't have power. Many of my neighbors have power outages throughout Old Northeast. I know Duke Energy and TECO are working hard and they'll get my power back up. But once we get past this, I would like to see commissioners and the city councils and the county commission talk about floating a bond issue to bury these power lines. This is crazy. They bury them in new development, and it's time to float a bond. That's why cities make bond issues, is to pay for big civic projects, and I would like to see us bury our power lines.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for the call. We really appreciate that. Stephanie, I think one of the reasons there is this issue over burying utility lines versus the poles, well, the poles are, you know, ugly. I mean, we have to admit it.
There's that.
But when they're buried, they can be much more expensive to repair, even trying to find where a repair is needed. So there are things to consider, but I'm with you, Sandy. I like them buried. Ian is in St. Petersburg. Hi, Ian.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to point out that I think what's really hard for people outside the state of Florida to understand when people are considering evacuating or staying. For my fiance and I, the idea of not being able to get back to our friends and family to help made us really feel conflicted about what exactly we should do. So we decided to stay in Pinellas County but go to a much safer place, to a home that was much more structurally intact. But I just think it's important that people outside the state of Florida understand that you're not just thinking about your immediate safety, you're thinking about the fact that the city that you know and love and the community and your friends and family may need your help right after the fact.
Right. Hey, what did you think about how local officials handled the storm? Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn, St. Pete's Rick Kreisman, our local emergency managers. What's your take on that?
Truth be told, this is my fiance and I's first hurricane that we've really had to deal with. We're from New England originally. I thought the city officials, local city and even state, even though I don't agree with everything Rick Scott has to say, I thought everybody really handled the entire situation really, really well. I'm very impressed by the state of Florida and how prepared they are to deal with these things.
Well, Ian, thank you so much. Glad you are safe. I'm Kirsten Cooper with Stephanie Colombini, and this is a Florida Matters special on Hurricane Irma. Matthew is in St. Petersburg. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Carson. Just wanted to call in and share my story. It was a little bit more stressful than what some folks probably in the area went through. I'm on my way back to St. Pete right now. My family was fully prepped. We had three houses locked down, all supplied, ready to ride it out, and the track kept getting worse and worse. So we bugged out to Northwest Orlando on a moment's notice, and it was a little stressful kind of going from hunker down mode into what my wife called walking dead mode, to scramble and grab everything that's really important and bail. So we had no problem getting there, but when we went through the storm, it was definitely the wrong move. We caught the eastern part of the eye wall for a little while. And my cousin's very lucky. We didn't have any vehicle damage, but the houses around us, big mature trees were gone. Several cars got pretty damaged. We saw shingles missing. The storm got up to about 110, 105, 110 on the miles per hour, and I'm sure there were some gusts. But I have a very healthy respect now for if a Cat 3 or higher is going to make landfall in your area. The wind is really the thing to worry about. I'm glad it missed St. Pete. My brother basically said the storm did a 7-10 split, where the Bay Area and most of Orlando both avoided a direct hit, which was good.
That is good. Of course, our neighbors in Lakeland had much more damage. And when the storm came ashore in Naples, Marco Island down in that area, it was still full force. So if you can imagine that in the area. Colleen is in Hudson. Hi, Colleen.
I've lived in Florida since 1988. And we did everything we were supposed to do. My son boarded up the house. We had water. We had everything. And the only damage, fortunately, to my house, two shingles blew off. But I'm at work now, and coming up 19, half of the lights are not working, signs are blown over, nothing is open, everything is still closed. You know, I found myself very blessed. I did sleep in my closet, I will say that.
Well, Colleen, I'm so glad you are safe. And yes, those intersections, we're being warned a lot about how to handle that when an intersection is out. Did you happen to observe cars doing the right thing and treating it as a four-way stop?
Yes, especially on 19, which I was surprised because I was going north. And as we all came to a light, everybody slowed down and looked. There's a few intersections they put cones out so that you can't make a left-hand turn, which I thought was smart because that's where the accidents are.
Thank you so much for the call. Glad you're safe and at work already this morning. How about that? All right.
Well, we've only got a few minutes left, so I wanted to share some good news with everybody. This has been such a frustrating, stressful week for so many people. Let's get some good news in our life, right? We got an email from two of our listeners, Lauren and John Dix. They said, every cloud has a silver lining and Hurricane Irma's no different. That's because the couple's new baby daughter, Josephine Fenton Dix, they're calling her Joey, they said she heeded the warnings and evacuated the womb Sunday afternoon. She was born about 1:40 p.m., just before the worst of the storm. That was when it was still looking like it was coming right for Tampa. So the Dix family, they rode out the storm at St. Joseph's Hospital in Tampa, and they say baby Joey, mom, dad, they're all safe and healthy. So congratulations to them. Joey's going to have quite the birth story.
Think about this, too. Did Hurricane Irma change the way you think about big storms? Was this the one? We're told at the beginning of every hurricane season to get your supplies ready. A lot of people have observed that in previous storms, they came in wince and, you know, nothing about it. But there's always that one storm that just changes culture, changes your entire attitude about these storms. Think about that. Well, that's all the time we have, and let's hope we don't have to do another post-hurricane show for a very long time. There are more resources on our website, WUSFnews.org. Our show is produced by Stephanie Colombini and Mary Shedden, our engineer Craig George, and thanks to Richard Jimenez and Chris Sampson for their expertise in handling our phone calls, and thank you for making those phone calls. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.